middle, né? Da hora corta a carne. Quando for.
Going to page 92. This is a reflection of the activities that we actually deal with in within PASA. So this map shows actually an indication of all the applications that we have received and processed in the last 3 years. And then if you can actually see, we have, for the past 3 years, this is what has been happening. We have actually received these applications, and then they have been processed to its full term, and then we have actually granted exploration rights over that, and even technical cooperation permits. And then this is actually the status of our South African map in relation to activities that we are actually doing in petroleum agencies in the past 3 years. So up to date, we have managed as an organization to receive more applications that have already filled up this particular area that you have seen in the previous slides. We have received quite a number of applications in relation to exploration, technical cooperation permit, and then even reconnaissance permits. So this particular map is actually displays a collective effort that comes from three components within PASA, meaning that the promotion division was actually responsible to make sure that it do the resource evaluation. After doing that, it makes sure that it compiles the information and then make sure that it promotes our prospectivity to local and international conferences. As a result of that, most of the investment came in and lodged applications which have been actually handled by the regulation division that is responsible for processing the technical cooperation permits, the reconnaissance permits, the production rights, and also the exploration right. So basically this is the collective effort of those two divisions, and then to add to that, we also have a component that we call the information management that normally collects geotechnical information in relation to the hydrocarbons, and they make sure that they archive that particular information to make sure that it's cataloged and then it's actually indexed in such a way that whoever that is interested in a specific area might actually have a view of what has been done in a particular field. So basically, this is a reflection of what promotion division has done, the regulation division has done, and even information management has actually done in the previous financial year. So the other project that I've already mentioned is the continental shelf claim. So in relation to the continental shelf claim project, this is a national project that is composed of the Department of Navy, the Department of Environmental Affairs, and the Tourism Foreign Affairs, and the Mineral Resource, and SA Maritime Authority, Council of Geoscience, and the Institution of Maritime Technology. It's a project that actually started in 2002 after South Africa ratified the Convention on the Law of the Sea, and its main purpose is to make sure that we expand our economic zone offshore. At the present moment, what we actually have, if I can show you the slide, the existing territory that we have as a South African country in terms of the RSA mainland is 1,220 square kilometers of the extent of the mainland, and we also have in relation to the islands 1,540 of square kilometers of the extent that we have. So in relation to that particular project, the special project that is a national project and a very strategic in nature, we are actually planning to claim and expand the western coast with 45,000 square kilometers and the eastern and the south coast with 1,075 square kilometers in terms of extent, and the Prince Edward that is 560,000 square kilometers and discovery ridge. So what we have for now, this is what we have, and then in terms of the project continental shelf claim, we are actually trying to have an extension to this particular mainland, and then also around the Prince Edward, and also towards the extent of the Discovery Reef. So basically, this is a project that has been going on since 2002, and in this financial year, we have actually managed to present our claim before the United Nations, and then they have actually received that the presentation was actually successful. So there was technical questions that we were actually asked to look into and then report back in their 36th session that is actually happening in the later in the year. So I'll hand over to our CFO on the financials.
Thank you, Honourable Members and Chair and Deputy Minister. Thank you for the opportunity. As you can see from the agency, our revenue picture doesn't look very pretty. We dropped our revenue from $77 million in 2013 to $38 million in 2014. This is as a result of the fact that the old order rights, which we were still receiving income from Petro SA on, have now come to an end, and we no longer receive any income from production rights. It goes directly in terms of the royalty bill to SARS. So we are utilizing our reserves as a method of funding until such time as our future funding mechanism has been resolved. I'll talk a bit more about that later. The income we did receive was higher than we anticipated because our sale of data and the interest in South Africa as an oil and gas destination continued to be good in the 2014 financial year. So we received more income than we had anticipated on data, but the income we had expected from exploration rentals was lower than we had anticipated as a result in the delay in the finalization of the shale gas regulations and the processing of those applications. Our operating expenditure has increased since the previous financial year, and this is as a result of the fact that I think the CEO already mentioned we needed to build capacity in order to meet the changing needs, especially around shale gas and our ability to defend the continental shelf claim. So we did increase our staffing capacity by between 10 and 15% in the previous financial year, and this led to an increase in costs. We, however, did have a very successful year in saving and reducing our operating costs, and this was largely in the travel and in the training and development area where we brought a lot of our training needs into the organization, and we actually trained a lot of people at a much lower cost by bringing the trainers into the organization. From an investment income position, we actually earned $18 million on our cash reserves, but we did make a loss for the year of $27.4 million. We had budgeted a much bigger loss than that, but as a result of the additional income and the savings that we made on operating costs, the loss was lower than what we expected it to be. On our financial position, as you can see, because we're actually moving into a loss position, our total asset position has actually decreased over the financial year, and although we are in a slightly better cash position than we were at the beginning of the financial year due to income that was generated at the end of the 2013 that we received, the last quarter of the 2014 financial year saw us start utilizing our cash reserves to fund operations, and that position is now ongoing on a regular basis because our income has now really slowed down and the interest in data is also reducing. On the financial performance for the financial year, we had an unqualified audit report. We had no matters of emphasis for the second year running at the organization, but we have ongoing concerns regarding the long-term funding because we were working quite closely with CEF and trying to resolve our long-term funding issues once the income that we had previously received was now moving and being paid to SARS, and that was put on hold when the amendment bill came out at the end of 2012. that delay in the finalization of those amendments to the MPRD has meant that we are now in a situation where we have sufficient funds to see out this financial year that we're in now and two more. So it's becoming critical for us to get to a stage where the future structure and funding of the agency is decided and we're in a position to actually deal with that issue, because at some stage, if we don't do that, it could become it could become critical. I'll hand back to the CEO to finalise the rest.
In conclusion, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and the Deputy Minister, the CFO has actually alluded to the concern on the future funding and then even the concern also on the draft amendment bill, as it actually impacts on how we move forward in relation to all the rights that we have actually signed with the operators and all that. It remains a concern. And then in terms of the capacity, we are fortunately enough managing to make sure that we are capacitated in such a way that we are able to deliver on our mandate. And then also the concern on the location of BASA is a serious concern to us, because of we report to two heads. So we'd like to see ourselves reporting to one instead of two. And then that's it. Thank you.
Do you want to choose between the two? Okay, thanks very much, Pastor. Petro essay, and then we'll have self to wrap up the presentation. Presentations. Yeah, we're doing Petro essay now. CEO, let me not forget now that page 95.
Page.
I want to come back to it. It's an important discovery.
Page.
I never knew all of this.
Oh.
Yeah. Petro essay.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairman. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. Good afternoon, Deputy Minister of Energy, my board members, and colleagues from other SOCs, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present our annual report for the previous financial year. Chair, I thought it would be important, Chair, to
why is there disturbance now? Yeah, well, I'm not aware of it. Okay. Just to say that Honorable Khreleng, we're just starting the presentation by Petro SA. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I thought just to start off the presentation, Chair, I thought it would be important to perhaps kick off with the reason why Petro SA exists. And this, Chair, in the ambit of discussions that we have been having a little bit earlier today, in terms of also attempting to answer one or two of the questions with regards to an NOC. But our mandate, Chair, for our existence is that we are mandated to operate as a commercial entity and to create value for the shareholder and, of course, to advance the national objectives in the petroleum industry and to complement and promote government policy and strategic thrust with regards to our industry. Chairman, if you allow me, I will also just state a fact that in the world today, national oil companies control around about 90% of the world's oil reserves and 75% of production. This similar number applies to gas as well as to oil. So many of the major oil and gas infrastructures in the world are controlled by national oil companies. Of the top 25 oil and gas reserve holders in the world, and of the top 25 oil and gas producers in the world, 18 of them are national oil companies. 60% of the world's undiscovered reserves, they lie in countries where the national oil companies have got privileged access to the reserves. As such, Chair, national oil companies are of great consequence to their country's economy and also of great consequence to importing the country's energy, security, and to the stability of the oil and the gas market. That, Chairman, is from the World Bank documentation, and it is a fact. So there is an absolute requirement for a country to have a national oil company to deal with certain priorities that you have in the company from an energy security perspective. And maybe to bring it a little bit more practical, Chair, what we call today British Petroleum, it started off, Chairman, many years ago as a national oil company. To name but others, AGIP was also created as a national oil company in 1926. Petrobras, coming closer to our times, 1953. India, Oil and National Gas Company, 1956. Kuwait, 1960. 1972, Statoil. 1974, Petronas, and so on and so forth. Chairman, if you look at these countries, you will find that the national imperative to have a national oil company, it is justified. So in our case, as PetroSA, it has been argued that those countries are countries that are rich in reserves, Chairman, but that is not necessarily the case all the time. Whether they have hydrocarbons or not, you find that it is very important to have a company of our caliber, and the national imperatives are the ones that come paramount in terms of these companies' existences. So that, Chair, was just by a short way of trying to deal with in terms of our mandate and where and whence it, what is the genesis of this mandate. Earlier on, Chairman, my shareholder has dealt in detail at group level about quite a few issues pertaining to PetroSA, where we dealt with all the financial issues. The most important issue that was dealt with was the feedstock challenge that we faced, and what are the consequences and implications of the work that we are doing around trying to address that issue. But maybe just to highlight, Chairman, we are, as had been stated earlier, busy with the project to try and provide feedstock for the longevity of the GTL plant. As the colleagues will know, the members will know, from time of inception, 1992, the plant has utilized about 1 trillion cubic feet of gas, and we need to find gas to put through the plant so that we can sustain. So our primary focus at this point is sustainability of an asset that was the first asset in the world when it was constructed to actually provide the technology of gas to liquid. Also, other highlights, Chairman, is that we are currently, in terms of our project, the feedstock project, we, as PetroSA, drilled, Chairman, this is a technical issue, but it's one of the renowned technical issues. We drilled the longest horizontal well at a depth of about 3,600 meters in the last year. which is the first in South Africa. There is quite a lot of firsts in terms of technical know-how and some of the things that we're doing at PetroSA. Our revenues, Chairman, improved by 12% year on year, as had been stated earlier at a group consolidated level. Chairman, what I wanted to request is that because we in detail covered the issues emanating from PetroSA and the group, I thought maybe not to bore the committee, I should rather highlight, as had been requested, some of the issues that are very pertinent to ourselves, and that would be, I think, the issue of our feedstock, because it is topmost. How are we dealing with the challenges of the project Ikwezi, as we call it, which is the delays that we have in our project and the implications thereof? It was a question that had been asked earlier, and it was deferred to this session by the shareholder to say we will go into more detail. If you allow me, Chairman, I will request the Chair to allow me just to allow project manager to give us a synopsis of what we are doing. I mean, the question earlier was, what is the cause of the delay and what are we doing about it? So if Chairman will allow me, I will request the project manager just to touch on that so that we can give an explanation to the members.
Project manager.
Chairman, I'm told I forgot to introduce him. It's Mr. Andrew Dipana.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of Parliament, and ladies and gentlemen. I'm the Acting Vice President for Upstream, under which the project Ikwezi resides. The project has some challenges that we are overcoming at this stage. The delays that we've encountered to date has mainly to do with the construction or the modifications of the topsides of the receiving platform, the FA platform. The Ikwezi project has got three main work streams. It is the drilling of the five horizontal wells. It is the subsea infrastructure that delivers the gas from the field to the platform, and then the modifications on the platform that enables it to receive gas from the FO field. Now, the biggest challenge that we've had in meeting the original first gas date was in the modification of the topsides of the FA platform, and that had to do mainly with the way that the project is being executed in terms of the model, the execution model that was embarked on initially. We have addressed those now. The challenge emanates from supply of material challenges that we've encountered. We've addressed that now. We've mitigated. We've expedited as much as we can, and everything is coming together now. We are currently finalizing the modifications on the topsides. The finalization is imminent, and as much as we can have started the commissioning without having the construction fully finalized, we have done that. So once the topsides modification is complete, the commissioning will be finalized, at which will then enable us to deliver gas to the refinery. To date, we have drilled three wells. We're busy completing the third well. We've had significant challenges in terms of the unexpected non-productive time during the drilling of the first two wells. Recognizing this and to mitigate the challenges that that has posed to us, we contracted a second drilling rig. We have subsequently let go of the first drilling rig. The drilling performance improvement we've seen over with the second rig now is in the order of a double. In other words, we're sort of getting double the drilling rates that we've achieved for the first two wells, so it all bears well for the completion of the remaining drilling program.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. So, Chair, I also thought that it would be prudent just to perhaps zoom in on some of the challenges that we face and what we've done about them. And I think if we go into our, which have been discussed quite at length at the SAFE level, but just to state that we are actually also working on ensuring that we can have other sources of income, and at that, apart from just relying solely on the plant, that we also rely on We also find other sources of income for the company, which at this stage is trying to work at increasing our local sales into the local market. So in terms of our business model, Chairman, we are looking at, we didn't do very well in our last year when it comes to the sales into the SADC countries as we had expected. This was due to certain delays from the one or two of the countries that we had expected to cooperate with. But we are, Chair, I think well on our way to starting to see that coming to fruition as the their systems and the company was launched, I think, 2 weeks ago, and we are hoping to see that our volumes will increase from that. I think, Chair, without going into too much of detail, I'd like to quickly go to our last page, Chairman, where we talk about what it is that we would like to do. This is the finance was quite detailed by the CFO of Group, Chairman. So I think we'll take questions when they do come, but without having to delve into the financials, let me perhaps go straight into the concluding page, which is the fact that in terms of the what we are trying to do, there was a question asked a little bit earlier to say, are you now, you came and you had a plan where you painted the vision 2025 of hope of what you wanted to be. Has anything changed given your situation and your reality? And we want to state that in terms of looking ahead, what we would like to do going forward, Honorable Chairman, is that we want to ensure that we successfully deliver on the feedstock project, because that is the key project at this point in time with regards to our sustainability. Also, we'd like to continue to start looking at our growth projects, which is the downstream entry. And then, of course, because of the fact that we are faced, Chairman, with these financial implications of the late flow of gas through our plant, we have recognized that there is a need to curtail our costs in the organization, and therefore cost containment is remaining a key area of focus across the organization. We are very busy finding all and eking out every cent out of the business that we can. We are also looking, there was also a question earlier on, what else are you doing in terms of looking at alternative feedstocks? I mean, I think it was dealt with somewhat by Seth, but if I can just add, is that we are looking at this whole option of bringing in gas into the system, and that gas would feed into the plant, and that gas would also be able to to be used for power generation, because bringing in the gas just for our uses is not economically viable, so we need to have other off-takers. We are currently busy with those discussions. And also, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we want to increase other business or other volumes that we're selling into the SADC countries, where we have gone into negotiations with some of the entities in the SADC countries. Traditionally, South Africa has been a supplier of petrol and diesel into the SADC countries, but recently, because we turned from being a net exporter into a net importer, therefore most of the product was put to bed here at home, and therefore the SADC countries started to have serious challenges in terms of that. So we are trying to negotiate so that we can be able to supply those countries. And then, of course, I think there was mention of the asset development plan, which is where we're trying to also develop a long-term solution for Mossel Bay beyond the gas. So we need to complete those technical studies and be able to start looking at options in terms of what we can do to give long-term longevity to the business. Chair, I think I should stop there, because I think a lot of the issues were mentioned, and I'll take questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Petro.
itself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, once again, just to wrap up some of the work that the SERF group-wide team has done over the past 4 or 5 hours. What we'd like to say to the Chair and the honorable members is that as a group, we will achieve commercial viability through our projects within the context of our strategic framework, which is stabilize, grow, and dominate. We have spoken quite a lot around Project Ikwezi as one of the projects that would help us to stabilize on matters relating to feedstock. We said a few things earlier on around the clean energy division and the projects within that renewable energy space, renewable energy investments. The CEO has just alluded to the asset development plan. It's a plan of finding alternatives within the GTL refinery, either looking at liquids, looking at LNG. Honorable Member spoke about LNG earlier on, or other alternative sources of feedstock to make the GTL refinery useful beyond 2017, 2018, when we have done all our efforts around using the Ikwezi gas to sustain the refinery. We are currently making comments within GAMP with the hope that eventually GAMP becomes a master plan. We will put together our own strategy insofar as gas is concerned. We will assist the state to achieve at least a 20% gas into the energy mix in line with the NDP of 2030. Those are the issues that we are working on today insofar as the gas strategy is concerned, and then we can start implementing those initiatives within the context of growth. The downstream acquisition is a huge growth effort for us, moving PetroSA from being a 5% player north of 20%, maybe even the space of 30% player. Downstream any acquisition would talk to that from 2015 to 2020. Implementing a solution so far as the alternatives for the GTL refinery is part of the ADP asset development plan implementation. We'll continue with renewable energy and we'll begin to look at relevant infrastructure that will take us to a 20% energy mix insofar as gas is concerned. We spoke a lot around Vlakfontein expansion, what it means taking us from being a 1 million ton player to a 2.5 million ton player in the space of coal, and supporting Kusile, amongst other initiatives that Eskom is working on. And a dominate, in essence, is to achieve market leadership. We will say as a leadership team that we want to be the partner of choice for the state in implementing the solutions that are energy related and assuring the state on matters of energy security supply. That, in a nutshell, Chairperson, is our framework to help us achieve commercial viability within the context of stabilize, grow, and then dominate. We spoke about the Tobenite coal, 3.5 million tons, moving AE from being a 1 to 2.5 through Vlakfontein extension to a 6 million ton player through Tobenite coal. Kleporke was one of the projects that we discussed earlier on. We may not have spoken much around shale gas, but there were discussions as well around oil storage. One of my colleagues spoke earlier on around the position of SFF, 25 days of storage, talking about 42 days of oil storage and then 60 days of oil storage. Those initiatives will require a lot of oil storage capacity. New builds, I spoke about new builds when I talk about the value chain, the midstream, tank builds. So there's quite a lot of projects that we are looking at in the pipeline to help us achieve what you would call commercial viability. And the essence, Chairperson, of Vision 2025 sits around these projects. And so we can tell you exactly what is sitting underneath, what we will do at each stage to ensure that come 2025, we've delivered our vision using projects and within the strategic framework of stabilize, grow, and then dominate. Our operating model, CEFSOC, is about strengthening group performance, ensuring effective oversight, strong core capabilities and skills to help us deliver on the projects, driving those projects, becoming a partner of choice for the state, ensuring that we are moving from being a pure transactional structure into a more strategic oversight structure. I think the issues you are privy to within this meeting around the transactional environment where we are supporting subsidiaries, we would like to move further and far away from providing that support, but ensure that we drive the strategic direction of those subsidiaries, allowing them to build their own capacities on the ground and deliver on the transactional environment. I think an oversight company is much more better equipped and within our operating model as a strategic company that is driving projects large scale and not sitting and doing tasks that are very much transactional. I think operating companies are very much equipped to do operations, and head office holding company structures must provide more oversight. Otherwise, there's a lot of conflict as to who will then ensure that the procurement is properly done. If we do the procurement, we provide oversight, it's got an inherent conflict in that model. It's for that reason, Chairperson, that our long-term operating model will be to focus around subsidiary management, delivering value through energy projects, and ensure that we've got a robust corporate strategy that will deliver both the business of today as well as the business of tomorrow. The core functions of the head office company will be around providing oversight in the subsidiary structures, will be to deliver the projects, stabilize, grow, and dominate with a very clear and robust corporate strategy, Vision 2025. That is the essence of what we should be doing as a head office company to ensure long-term sustainability of the group. We think we'll be relevant if we become the partner of choice for the state. We think we'll be relevant if we have the right capabilities, the know-how to deliver these projects, and we have the right leadership to address and execute the core functions of CEF within the CEF mandate. And last but not least, Chairman, as a way forward, it is about creating value. It is about creating value through the value chain participation. It is about reducing poor performance and ensuring that all the issues that are red are eliminated within the group, especially when it comes to some performance objectives as well. Eliminating fruitless and wasteful expenditure, audit findings, corruption out, poor project investments out. We must be able to raise the bar insofar as project execution is concerned, to raise the bar in terms of acquiring and retaining skills, to raise the bar in terms of operational excellence. That's, in a nutshell, Chairperson, what we wanted to present to you today around the CEF group of companies. And I thank you and your members, for your indulgence today. Thank you very much.
We have no questions. Yeah, there's a question, so I'm responding to the question you're asking. honorable members. Okay, honorable Estesen, I'll make sure you speak first. Yeah. Honorable Estesen, Makai, but your hand is up. Freyland, now you can raise your hand. Honorable Law, is your hand up?
No,
sir. Oh, okay. Estesen and Honorable Freyland. That's all. So we are almost towards the end of the day. Honorable Estesen.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm sure the Honorable Freyland reads my mail, so thanks for that. Chair, I starting with PASA. The ladies, I think it's Kosikazi, Mekwe, and Gwenam Kubani, Mams. You mentioned that PASA was already under financial strain. Won't it be suicide now? Under the proposed Mineral and Petroleum Resource Amendment Bill, the government proposed to abolish the PASA base in Cape Town, divest its functions to the Department of Energy in Pretoria, place its key roles in the hands of the minister-appointed regional managers, and give extra commercial obligations to companies that are involved in South Africa's onshore exploration. Let's get all my paper. And to add to this pending fiasco, the government also wants the state to obtain free carried interest in both explorations and product rights, plus an extra option to secure additional production interest. In effect, South Africa wants to take as far-reaching steps in the direction of resource overtaking inside a competitive oil game with, I think, this illegal advice. These moves could set South Africa exploration business back a decade or more. The CEO already mentioned shale gas, and I know, I think also ASA's mineral resources is also now going to, or ASA going to mineral resources. For one thing, just to mention shale gas, I think in 2011 it was estimated that the Karoo recoverable shale gas resources is something like 485 trillion cubic feet, and then it was down to 390, 170 something, and eventually to 17. And it was a mission of PASA to develop shale gas. You know, this is not. Moscow's only got maybe 1 trillion cubic feet. But Moscow is right next to the sea. We haven't got water. It takes about 20 million liters for each operation of water. It'll take about 500 tanker trucks to go there. Will PASA's budget be able to carry this through? Let me go to Petro South Africa. Petronas, I think, should very soon receive an offer from Petro South Africa to buy this. I think Engen is already making this up. better South Africa's balance sheet, already down by 54% on profit reduction. Could they be able to absorb this? I think the price is 14 billion rand. And then also a big concern to me, if I just may mention this, on Petro South Africa was the error fund management with taxpayers' cash disappeared. A lot of money what disappeared. Will these monies be refunded? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and I apologize for the earlier walkout. It was not in protest, I promise. and sorry for coming a bit late and that I missed Parsa's presentation. Because Parsa is a very good entity, and I am a bit concerned about the kind of uncertainty both in your funding model as well as in terms of where you're going to finally be located once a decision is made on the MPRDA. But seeing that you are still with us, let me just ask you, we did see the President announce this week, I think it was called Operation Pakasi, is it Pakisa? Pakisa, that's it. And talking about how there's so much wealth locked up in our oceans. Given that you are the entity that is involved in looking at what is available and looking at different rights and things like that and what companies are involved in, can you tell me if companies at this stage are in fact starting drilling operations, or are companies holding back at this point? I mean, do you have a sense of what the market is in fact doing? Because my sense is that given the uncertainties around the MPRDA and the kind of clauses in there, that we're not seeing major investment of oil companies in fact exploring our coastline. And I just wanted to know if you've got anything to say on that, if you've got any info on that. Then just looking at Petra SA, I'm struggling to get my head around a bit this Ekwezi and this impairment, which is essentially a kind of asset write-down. I mean, let me just see if I've got the narrative correct here. I mean, you're saying that we've had delays, which has been due to kind of technical problems, material supplies, and conditions out at sea, I suppose, holding back the project. So there's been a delay there. But why is it that there's a impairment then? Because impairment says that you're kind of writing down an asset. I mean, surely it's just a kind of increase in costs, or what is it that I'm missing here? Why are we writing down an asset? Does this mean, because I know that you're not getting income from the gas in your GTL refinery, and is that what's then leading to this 3.4 billion rand loss? Just explain that to me exactly. Why are we writing down an asset? Well, what is actually involved in that? Because I don't fully understand that. Then to take it forward, we've clearly, are we assured once the Ekwezi does come online that in fact there is sufficient gas there? I'm just interested to know what your anticipated gas reserves are out there. I mean, will this solve the problem for the GTL refinery once the Ekwezi finally gets completed? Or is this still an unknown? I think we need to know that as to what kind of risks are involved. And if this isn't the kind of final solution for the GTL refinery, then the issue comes in, well, what is the solution for this GTL refinery? How long does this plant still have in terms of its life? I mean, how long can this plant remain there? Because it's been here for, what, almost 30 years now, I think? Or how long? 20 years. 22 years. Okay, so how much longer will the plant still be around? What's its lifespan? And so what kind of period are we talking about that we have to find feedstock for? I'd just be interested to see that. And then where are we going to get this feedstock from? We started this discussion earlier, but I still don't have any kind of clarity on that. So clearly we can't do an LNG import terminal in Mossel Bay. That's out of the question now. So if we do one in Saldanha or in Atlantis, somewhere around there, are we then talking about building a pipeline to transport that gas across to Mossel Bay? And does it make it feasible for us to import LNG and to then transport it along a pipeline? Will that all be within the bounds of economic feasibility? Or are we saying that actually that isn't a solution? And if not, then what else can we be looking at? Because I think we need to have these kind of tough kind of decisions put in front of us so that we can decide. I mean, we want to help you on this as well. We need to be open about what it is that we should be looking at in terms of future projects. Then just in terms of your downstream, I see you're still very committed to being a downstream player and that you want to I don't know whether it's engine or whether you are looking at other things. But just in terms of your current balance sheet at the moment, and particularly given this impairment, I mean, I imagine your cash reserves are quite low. How do you propose to get the equity for any kind of downstream acquisitions? Are you speaking to Treasury about government guarantees, or are you looking at kind of private investment to help you acquire that, if that is what you in fact are proposing? So I'm just interested to hear what your business model is going forward with regards to that. And then just lastly, with your the Equatorial Guinea operations, I presume that's all finished now, and the same with Egypt. Have we finalized all of that and we've moved away from that? And we're not looking at any other countries in terms of drilling for oil and gas. Just be interested to know what your plans are on exploration, just so that we are aware of that. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mohammed Salam.
Thanks, Chair. At least some people get intimidated when you note my hand. I'm happy. I appreciate. Chair, the presentation earlier by SEF and the presentation by Petro SA alludes to the fact that 20 years ago a gas liquid plant was built, 1992, and commissioned. Definitely you were not there. You were still dreaming of being there. Now, what I want to understand, when you took over, were there any activities happened in terms of looking for these whales that we are talking about today? Were there any plans in place in terms of the sustainability of this that we are talking about today, so that we move from a point of understanding exactly what we are talking about as the committee, and then when we take decisions, at least we take decisions on an informed kind of a position. Because if you, let's say, built a house or a firm, definitely there will be measures and strategies that you put in place in terms of sustaining that particular firm from time to time, so that it grows every day beyond the lifespan that is there or that you decide on. Now, if you can just respond to that question, and definitely I will have a follow-up if I'm not satisfied in terms of your responses, because we really need to understand whether after 1994 there were activities happening in terms of looking for gas, so that we understand exactly and be able to make an analysis of what really is a problem. We don't want to be part of this committee for 5 years and can't even reflect on deliverables or our contributions during our term of office. So the information that you will provide on this particular issue will assist us to broaden our thinking. Thank you.
No more questions. Seth. Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I would request the Chair, if he so allows us, for PASA to address the two questions that came from Honourable Member Esther Eason around affordability, as well as the other question that came from Honourable Member Grayling around Operation Pakisa, as well as the activities that are taking place right now, whether there's drilling up or there's uncertainty insofar as the MPRDA is concerned, through you, Chair. I would then request Petro SA to respond on, it's called engine here, but it's probably the downstream acquisition, as well as the quasi impairment that came from one member, Grayling, and then together Petro SA and ourselves would address the concerns raised by Honourable Member Mahambe Hlala on the state that we inherited and what we have done as the leadership if we inherited a certain state of affairs and around feedstock. Through the Chairperson, if possible, Chair. PASA Chairperson, by Petro SA Chairperson, and then and Self would add to the extent that maybe the entities, yeah.
All right. You're just trying to cultivate a culture of governance discipline. PASA.
Thank you, Chair, and then thank you, Honourable Esther Eason, on the question that he posed in relation to the impact of the MPRDA towards moving PASA from SAF to DMR, free carry, and then the shale gas development, and then whether we will be able to carry out our function as such, as looking at our financial constraint. The fortunate part of that is that PASA is the regulator in the sense that it doesn't do the shale gas development. We regulate all companies that actually has an interest in terms of doing the shale gas development. So the free carry is one of the provisions that have been mentioned by the Department of Mineral Resources in terms of how they can actually make sure that the state
participate and benefit from the shale, from the offshore or onshore operations. And then moving PASA to DMR is the decision that has been made by the Department of Mineral Resources to that effect. Unfortunately, we are in a position whereby we'll be guided by them, and then if a directive comes to us to say that we have to move, we will unfortunately abide by that, whether we are in agreement or not. In relation to the question that has been raised by Honorable Khailen, funding model locations, the concern that you have, and then the statement that have been mentioned by the president or during the Operation Pakisa unveiling. Yeah, what we have realized in this financial year, we have actually had two drilling operations, one in the deep water, and then the other one was conducted by Petro SA. So we have actually seen two drilling activities happening on our shore. The other one was Toyota.
Patricia.
Thank you, Chairman. Honorable Chairman, following the culture of hierarchical distribution of responsibilities, may I kindly request the Chair to allow my CFO to deal with Honorable Khailing's question and Honorable Esther Hazen, which is talking about one was the affordability of, I guess the question is affordability of the things that you want to do. That was Honorable Esther Hazen's question. How are you going to afford the things you want to do given the status of your balance sheet and some of the things that you're doing? And then Honorable Khailing was asking about more explanation in terms of impairment, you know, explain it, unpack it, why are we writing down this asset, and so on. So if the chairman allows me, I will request the CFO to go into that explanation. And then with regards to some of the activity that we did, maybe just as a an indication of what activities from an exploration perspective, from an analysis perspective of the shore, what we've done in terms of looking for more gas. I'll ask through you, Honorable Chairman, that Mr. Dipner will deal with that. But I think maybe if I can just deal with the question before that of the of what now that you know that you've got few gas reserves, what is it that you plan to do? There was a question like that from Honorable Khailing, and where would we get the feedstock, and how long, what is the lifespan of the plant, as it were? So effectively, like we say, in terms of hardware, the plant in Mossel Bay is pretty young at 22 years in terms of hardware. If we look around us, most of the plants that produce petrol, diesel, and other liquid hydrocarbons from oil around the country, there are some which were built as long ago as 1952, 1953, and they are still in operation today. So effectively, from a hardware perspective, I mean, you can see with maintenance, good maintenance, and I think we do maintain our plant well, you could see the plant lasting for another 30 to 40 years. So you've got life in the hardware. So the hardware really is not the problem or is not the challenge. Your challenge is your feedstock or the hydrocarbons that you put into the hardware. And so a question was asked, what else can you do? So effectively, if we look at gas as continuing to be the source, which is one of the options that we're looking at, and I'll just go into that a little bit further just now. We then have to look, we're looking at scenarios of how to optimize around low gas throughput. And for that, we're looking at how do we look at the business model in terms of the gas to liquid scenario and also the gas to power. So if you look at margins and returns, depending on which one is giving us more power, we might look at different business models in terms of sharing those two revenue streams, as it were. So that's the one thing. But the other thing that we're looking at is also how, under the asset development plan, what are the other options for the plant. If you look at the configuration of the plant, after a certain point, that plant is capable of actually running liquids. So the issue is, under the ADP, we're looking at, is there a possibility to turn the plant into, at some point, into a liquid feedstock and liquid manufacturing plant. And that's one of the studies and the things that we're looking at under our ADP. Also, what type of products do you actually want to produce? Even when you start bringing gas through the plant, do you necessarily want to produce what would be termed as low-grade petrol and diesel? Low-grade, if you're taking the feedstock as an imported feedstock, let's say, given the costs, would you want to rather produce higher-end products which give you higher value? So those are some of the things that we're looking at under our ADP in terms of alternatives. So those are the sort of options. But I think in terms of the plant itself, and that is actually perhaps the crux as well, to say you've got a wonderful asset standing there, the steel is there, everything is there, you've got to be able to use it. And I think that is, you know, one of the driving forces to say it's not old, as it were, it is a young plant, and you can use it to do something with it and add and push value through it. And that's what we're looking at. And then maybe just to talk, there was a question about operations in Egypt and operations in EG. And the question, the answer to that is that, no, we're not operating in neither of the above currently. And are there any plans for other countries for drilling and so on? Our strategy in terms of the upstream strategy is that we look, in terms of adding reserves, we look at producing or near-producing assets. In other words, assets that have been de-risked already, and that is because of the risky nature of this business. So given our current situation, which Honorable Esther Hazen was alluding to say that your money is sort of committed and so on, given our current financial situation, our strategy is to look at producing and near-producing assets. So we're not looking at starting to drill and explore and so on anywhere outside of South Africa. So I think that deals with those. And then maybe I'll ask Lindy to deal with the issue of the impairment. Why the impairment? Lindy Webakoro is our CFO.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The impairment arises when the carrying value of the asset is less than the present value of future cash flows. So what has happened with Ikwezi is that in the year under review, the capital costs increased due to the depreciation of the rand. The rand against dollar depreciated by 15%, but also the delays that were spoken about earlier, to say you've got these cash flows over the five-year period of our corporate plan. So if the cash flows are now delayed, when you present value them, they don't give you that anticipated value. So the value is now less. And the thing is, we are present valuing these earnings over a five-year period of our corporate plan. So we didn't look beyond that. But also, Ikwezi is supposed to give us a certain amount of reserves. Depending on the operating model, that could last us 3 years, 5 years, depending on how we operate the plant. So those are the factors that contributed to the impairment. And I just want to point out that there's a difference between a write-down and an impairment. A write-down is where you write something off. That's it. You're certain that you'll never realize value. But what we've done in this case, we've impaired, so we've made a provision for a loss, because there's uncertainty as to whether we will ever realize those earnings. So we will only write down when we are certain that we will never realize the value. And that will be triggered by decline in reserves, for example. Yeah, and we're not there yet. So we have impaired, we haven't written down. And then there was a question on our financial strength. So as of 31 March 2014, we had 7 billion rand cash on balance sheet. Most of it, or some of it is encumbered, some of it is committed. So yes, we do have some funding constraints. Our ability to undertake growth projects and sustainability projects is under threat. By the nature of the sector, the projects in oil and gas are quite sizable, and they require significant equity investment, which we may not afford. So we, at some point, we will need to be recapitalized, but we have not engaged Treasury just yet on the recapitalization because, as it was said earlier, most of these projects are at feasibility or pre-feasibility, and we will need to have some firm cash flows to have a fruitful discussion with Treasury. And as it regards the downstream acquisition, we have engaged with Treasury, we have engaged with the investment community, and discussions are ongoing. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair,
what's happening now?
Should I answer, Chair? We haven't finished. We
okay.
We'd ask the Chair if Mr. Dipena could answer the one question.
Or you continue?
Yes, Chair. Just the one question. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. From yes.
Go ahead.
Chair, maybe just to set the scene, the question was that what activities were done in terms of looking for more gas to sustain the plant, because the plant started 20 years ago, GTL, and at the time there was a known reserve of 1 TCF, which was given a timeline. So what else has been done in the interim? So, Chair, perhaps just to state that there used to be a lot of exploration activity which was done around the coast of Mossel Bay in the search for more gas or gas for the GTL plant and for other uses. At some point, those exploration activities started to peter down and they stopped. And I think till about 20, was it South Coast? Which was the first one?
South Coast.
Yes. 2011?
Yeah,
it was the FO one. Yes, FO we started in 2011, which is part of the current drilling program. But because we have somebody with institutional memory here, Chairman, if you will allow me, Honourable Chair, I will just request that he just fill in on that detail. Honourable Chair, Mr. Dipena. Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair and members. If you look at the drilling or exploration activity and express it in terms of drilling or seismic activity and you plot that through the years, you'll see that there has been a lull in activities from the period in exploration from 1992 onwards. Most of the drilling that was done during the 90s was development drilling for exploration that was successfully done in the 80s. The last big seismic survey at that period that was acquired by, talking about the southern offshore now, was in 2000, and then the first in 2011 then was the first time that we started the seismic activity offshore South Africa again, the South Coast, apologies, for feedstock purposes. Part of the reason why there was a delay is that there has been in the last 10 years or so a step change in technology as well. The survey that we shot in 2011 and 2012 in the Central Basin in the quest for additional feedstocks has deployed technology. It was some of the first, again, we talked about first in PetroSA, it was one of the first
commercial applications of this technology that was done offshore South Africa, high-resolution seismic surveys, which allows us to see much deeper into the subsurface now, and which gives us more confidence in mapping potential reservoirs for future feedstock drilling. At the same time, the drilling that we've now been doing, Ikwezi, as was alluded to by the CEO as well, again, the improvement in the technology in allowing us to drill horizontally at such depth is what enables these pursuit of additional feedstock now. So the Honourable Member is right that there has been a lull in, or slowdown, if we talk about a slowdown in exploration activity specific, and you need to do the exploration in order to unlock the feedstock projects, because by the nature of the development project, from exploration to production on a fast track basis, you're probably looking at 5-6 year spans generally. It's a bit we're taking a bit longer here currently, but the renewed focus in terms of potential future feedstock from indigenous resources offshore is receiving the attention, and that is under that work stream that was alluded in the CEO's presentation as well about the feedstock.
Petrus, are you done, eh, sir? Deputy Minister, we now have come to the end of our meeting before the Deputy Minister. Okay, my question in page 95, I like this page. I like the green in this page. Is it not the blue? Okay, what is EEZ?
That means the exclusive economic zone.
Okay. The extended continental shelf, total area of claim 1.87. So is that in addition to the 1.450? Okay, thank you very much. It's an important discovery. When I thought of South Africa, home South Africa, I always thought of the 1.2. Now I realize that, you know, in fact, it's far bigger than that. So the given the size of what is outside land, so the ocean economy becomes very strategic for the future. Okay, we at the end. Say, please introduce yourself.
My name is Ziki van Averbeke. I'm the General Manager Promotion, and as such, the project lies in my division. I just wanted to remind the members that 1.8 million square kilometers is what we have claimed. We haven't got that yet. So please, I'm just trying to manage the expectations.
No, good luck. We can see the claim. She did say that it is at the United Nations, so there's a process. Good luck. We think we'll get most of this. In any event, I'm happy that my home, South Africa, is far better than what I always thought. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I believe the fact that we can almost be coming to an end at this time must be saying that we are all becoming very familiar with these activities. We had anticipated that this would be the longest session, but I believe the way maybe the management of the information was done, it assisted us so we don't have a session into the night. But I want to take this opportunity, Honorable Chairperson, to really thank the members of the committee, because I believe the questions and the challenges they place before us always remind us that they are this issue of energy security, something that occupies all of us, and they assist us in that thinking process. I believe the entities sitting here have a huge responsibility of which they are very aware.
in terms of ensuring that this mandate of energy security is carried forward. But one of the things, maybe, if I may, Chairperson, want to say is that I believe that finally CEF has turned the corner. There is now a clear program going forward. You don't get a sense of disparate entities all over the place, but there is some kind of coherence and a joint vision in terms of where we're going, which also facilitates the work that the department itself has to do. So on some of the outstanding matters around policy and regulation, this is helping us, because then we can be working with a clearer understanding of what we want to do and who will be doing that, and making sure that there is space and access for all. The guiding principle for us still remains the issue of the triple challenges. And these are sectors that unfortunately are lagging behind in terms of transformation, in terms of creating the jobs, creating the skills, reducing unemployment and inequality. So those issues still will always be the ones that we need to be asking. And in my interactions with the entities, I think this has come up all the time to say, while we have all these wonderful plans, how are we practically getting the people who are outside the mainstream into the mainstream? So those are matters that we cannot lose sight of, and we hope with the assistance of the committee that we will be able to meet some of those challenges. But I thank the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. Thanks very much, Honorable Members. We have had a shorter day. Thanks very much to board members and management of the different entities. The committee support staff, our friends who are always here in the committee with us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming. I think we have now come to the end of our meeting. So the committees are adjourned.